Welcome back to our seminar series. I've been told, hold the mic like this, because if you hold the mic like that, then you lose half the strength of the volume, right? So I have to hold my elbow up. First thing I'd like to do is apologize to this lady right here for minimizing the value of her statement about Prabhupada being our grandfather, her grandfather. Because Prabhupada himself would say, yes, you can pray to my Guru Maharaj because the grandfather is kinder than the father. So that's very valuable, actually, to think of Prabhupada as your grandfather, because he'll show you more kindness. He'll just look at me and incinerate me with his glance, which he did. So it's good. That came up in the first part of the lesson. We're going to review the first part of the lesson, because it's been a few whole hours since we did that, and some people weren't even here, so we have to catch up on what we did. What did we do? Anybody remember? What's the first thing we did in that part one of lesson three? We looked at... Oh, it's true. That's the first thing we did. And what was the point of that slide? Do you remember the point of that?
That Prabhupada was reciprocated with little Saraswati.
That wasn't Saraswati.
Was not Saraswati?
No. That was somebody else. But it was a little girl.
Okay.
And the point was that that little girl has just as much opportunity to have a core foundational relationship with Srila Prabhupada, as does his initiated disciples, who was a lady in the background, my god sister Srimati Himavati Mataji. Prabhupada's for everybody, and especially he's for his follower, people who are following his instructions. So that's what makes us Prabhupada Anugas, that we're accepting his instructions. It's not a question of being initiated by him or not being initiated. It's a question of following him. Okay, and then we looked at prophecies, right? Puranic and Gaudiya that Prabhupada fulfilled. And then we looked at how Lord Chaitanya set the stage of world history to send his military field commander. Prabhupada fulfilled that prophecy, taking a Krishna consciousness all over the world, turning atheists into theists, hippies into happies, faithless into faithful. So then we looked at the last thing we did was we took a look at the fine tuning. You're really going to sit there, huh? Can you see? Yeah. Well, not when I stand there. I'm not going to sit here the whole time. I'm going to stand right in front of you. Anyway, so, Lord Chaitanya made a very amazing religious adjustment, political adjustment, and cultural adjustment right in the 1960s when Prabhupada was about to come to America. And so now Prabhupada's in America, and that's where we pick up. So when Srila Prabhupada arrived in America, where did he stay? Anybody raise your hand? Okay. Yeah, if you speak loudly, you don't really need a mic. But
yeah, at the Agarwal's place.
Have you been to Butler, Pennsylvania?
No.
Oh. It's small. It's still a small little town. Welcome to Butler, home of the Jeep. Every place has its claim to fame, right? So you drive into Butler. Welcome to Butler, home of the Jeep. The Jeep was invented in Butler as World War II was starting. So it's a small town. So when Prabhupada was there for 3 weeks, he was doing two things. He was studying Americans. He wanted to see who his first audience was. So he he was amazed by how Americans were living. One day, Sally Agarwal, his hostess, it was a multicultural family, Sally and Gopal Agarwal. Sally was an American lady. Gopal was the husband. And they had a little baby named Bridge, as in Bridge Basi. And they had an older daughter. She was 3. Her name was Pamela. Pamela and Bridge. So you probably see the pictures of Prabhupada encouraging Bridge to stand and walk. Have you seen that in the Leelamrita? Yeah. He's holding his, Prabhupada's eyes are bugging out. You know. So one day, Sally Agarwal said that Swamiji was in her bathroom and all of a sudden water started coming out from underneath the door. And she knocked on the, she said, Swamiji, are you all right? And she opened the door and there's Prabhupada. He's trying to wash his clothes Indian style on Sally's bathroom floor. You know, because in India, the bathrooms slope to a drain, right? So there's Prabhupada down on the floor, you know, mush and gush and whap and bap, just like the Indian ladies at the river, right? Or in people's bathrooms, you know, in India. But the floor did not slope to a drain, so it was just all coming out the door. Oh, Swamiji, I'll have to show you the washing machine. Washing machine? What's that? Prabhupada was thinking, how are these people living, you know? Washing machine? And then he saw how Sally was cleaning her house. Vacuum cleaner? What's that? Prabhupada told us later, he said, when I was alone in New York that first year, sometimes I would just get on the bus and put a coin in the meter and I would just sit down on the bus and I would ride all over New York just looking at how you people were living. Something amazing to me. He was studying Americans. But he was also... Who was Prabhupada writing there, do you know? I mean, that picture isn't depicting what I'm saying, but... Yeah, he was writing his God brothers. Hey, I'm here! I made it. Remember? You know, 1936, 30 years before, 29 years before. Remember, Guru Maharaj wanted us to all to go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness in English? Well, I made it. Here I am. And why don't you come and help? Especially Prabhupada is writing God brothers who are still very active in their own individual mutts now. You know, the Gaudiya mission is a monolithic mission. It broke up in 1936. But still, individual mutts are surviving. So, if you have access to the Bhaktivedanta database, there's so many letters Prabhupada was writing. But especially, I chose an excerpt from one letter to show you Prabhupada's mood of how he was trying to revive the Gaudiya mission. Okay, this is November 8th, 1965. If you have the database, I hardly recommend man, you read the whole letter. So let's, why don't you read this excerpt? Now this is long before the corporate culture in the modern age coined the phrase servant leader. You probably heard of that phrase, a good leader is a good servant, right? So Prabhupada was doing that. He was in that mood. So here is Prabhupada writing to a godbrother named Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj, who in the heyday of the Gaudiya Math, in the golden days of the Gaudiya mission, he was the main organ. He was Bhaktisiddhanta's manager. He was a good fundraiser, he could handle money, he could do a lot of things. So here's Prabhupada writing Tirtha Maharaj.
So here is a chance for cooperation between us, and I shall be glad to know if you are ready for this cooperation. I came here to study the situation, and I find it very nice. And if you are also agreeable to cooperate, it will be all very nice by the will of Srila Prabhupada.
That, of course, means Bhaktisiddhanta. Look at this. The first few lines, look at cooperate. Because in his last will, Bhaktisiddhanta said, work conjointly, work together. You know, instead they all were competing who's going to replace Bhaktisiddhanta. That was wrong. Okay, If you agree,
then take it for granted that I am one of the workers of the Sri Mayapur Chaitanya Math. I have no ambition for becoming the proprietor of any math or mandir, but I want working facilities.
Yeah, look at this. You can be in charge, Maharaj. He's writing Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj. Take it for granted. I'm one of the workers, because Tirtha Maharaj is in charge of the Sri Mayapur Chaitanya Math, which still exists there in Sridhar Mayapur. So, you know, I'm here. I can recruit devotees. I can organize. You can be in charge, but I'm your man here, you know. Let's do it. Better late than never. Right? And we say in America, better never late, but better late than never. So Prabhupada is in the mood of a servant. I'm your servant, Prabhupada said. That's the only question I ever asked my Guru Maharaj. How can I serve you? You'll see that very dramatically in the next lesson. And then Prabhupada said, you know who's here, Maharaj? You know, it's the Vedanta, it's the Ramakrishna mission, the Mayavadis, you know, Vivekananda, Ramakrishna. They're here, they've reinvented themselves in America as the Vedanta Society. And the Americans, they're so naive, they're flocking to their skyscraper and they're paying so much money to hear all this 10th class rubbish Mayavad philosophy, Prabhupada said. But we Gaudiya Math people, we have the real thing. We have the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, and we have become paupers, poor people, because of all the fighting. But we can still do it. Prabhupada is trying to revive the Gaudiya mission. He didn't think of being the founder acharya of anything. So, what kind of a response did he get? Your body language is telling the whole story. Yeah, that's what we do in America, or in the West, right? We go like this. You do this for yes?
Yes.
Okay. In India, it's like... it's the infinite neck, right? You don't know what it is, right? That's one way we're challenged in Mayapur. You know, we don't know what we're meaning, Prabhu. Anyway, more about that later. And then Prabhupada said, Maharaj, you, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta, you have those Calcutta businessmen, those Marwaris, in the palm of your hand. And you can inspire them. We need a skyscraper too. You can inspire them to give crores of rupees. They say crorepatis. That means, you know, millionaires. Crorepatis. And you also have the contacts in Delhi to get those rupees released as dollars. So we need a skyscraper too. Yeah, we have the real thing. Unfortunately, there was little if any response from his godbrothers. The only one who actually contributed something, I think the following year, was his godnephew Narayan Maharaj, who finally sent some incense and kartals, and then finally he sent a mridanga. Yeah, the first Prabhupada was just banging on this little bongo drum, you know. And then finally a mridanga came. So, yeah, there was little if any response. So in that first year, Lord Chaitanya showed Srila Prabhupada, look, they're not going to help you. They can't help you. Because that unfortunate mood of non-cooperation that was, you know, flaming, that was roaring in the 1930s, it was still alive in the 60s. They're not, even one godbrother wrote, of course, if what you're doing is not bona fide, Swami Maharaj, then your mission is ludicrous. So Prabhupada said, ludicrous? My mission? This is what Guru Maharaj wanted us all to do. Remember? You know, wake up. Prabhupada is trying to tell them, this is not my personal thing, my personal project, so let's do it. But they didn't respond. They weren't allowed to, actually, because of the mood was non-cooperative. So Lord Chaitanya showed Prabhupada that, you know, you're going to have to go it alone. You're going to have to make a clean break from the catastrophe of the Gaudiya Math. You're going to have to start something new. Not a new sampradaya, But you're going to have to revive the Sampradaya by starting a fresh branch. Yeah, so that's what Lord Chaitanya showed Prabhupada. From September 65 until July 66, when Prabhupada incorporated ISKCON, he was toiling in obscurity. Here's Prabhupada in a letter. Looking back on that time, he wrote this in 72 to a New York devotee. Quote, "When I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, who will listen to me in this horrible, sinful place? And I was born in New York, so I can attest to that. It is a dungeon of demons." And he was even more so then. It's a little cleaned up now, a little bit, but it was really bad then. "All right, I shall stay a little longer. At least I can distribute a few of my books. That is something. But Krishna was all along preparing something I could not see. And he brought you to me, by one, sincere American boys and girls, to be trained up for doing the work of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now I can see it is a miracle. Otherwise, your city of New York, one single old man, with only a few books to sell, for barely getting eatables, how he can survive? What to speak of introducing God consciousness movement for saving the humankind? That is Krishna's miracle. Now I can see it." It was also a really wicked winter. I was born in New York City, right near 22nd Avenue. I grew up in Connecticut, which is a little state just next to New York. And that was a brutal winter. Brutal. Big, huge blizzards, you know, one after another. 60, 70 mile an hour winds. Take your breath away. Prabhupada's walking around in a dhoti, you know, a little swami hat. Somebody gave him an overcoat. You see the pictures. And Prabhupada's walking in the snow. It's amazing. He survived that winter. There was even a blackout for 3 days. I don't know what Prabhupada thought. All over the eastern seaboard, from Washington, D.C. to Montreal, Canada. Huge blackout. Maybe he didn't take notice of it because that's India's common blackouts. But for 3 days, there was no power, you know. So, 1965, Prabhupada was toiling in obscurity. Nobody knew him. Just Dr. Ramamurti Mishra, this Mayavadi yogi, gave him a room to stay in for a few months. And then he moved to the Bowery. Because one of yoga's, what's his name? Dr. Mishra's yoga students was from the Bowery. So he invited Prabhupada to come and share his loft. Okay, so this image is a little out of joint. It's 22nd Avenue, not 26th Avenue. And the Twin Towers were not there. They were built later, and then they came down before now. You know, they came and went between then and now. And, yeah, the Statue of Liberty is there. That's good. But I like this. You know, I like the matchless gifts. Very prophetic, right? It had been a curiosity shop, you know, where you buy things, like a pawn shop. We say a pawn shop, where you put things in on consignment. And then they got it, you know. And there's the first deity, a painting. Panchatattva. Actually, that's not the... It was a Panchatattva painting, but it wasn't that one. But there's... Yeah. Okay, so finally, Prabhupada got some serious listeners. And then... So when did Prabhupada incorporate ISKCON? Anybody know the date? The solar date? CE? In the common era? July 13th, 1966. Want to read?
Neglected by his godbrothers, Srila Prabhupada was obligated to found a fresh branch of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. On July 13, 1966, in New York City, he incorporated the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. Singing the paper
signing the papers only with his sannyasa name, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami.
Why only? Because Prabhupada knows already by now that Lord Chaitanya is asking him to be the founder of acharya of a brand new branch, but he knows he can't, that people don't know anything about that. They don't understand hardly what a Swami is. If you said Swami, you know, in those days, you might as well have said a genie out of a bottle or Houdini or something. You know, Houdini, the mystic escape artist. You know, no one knew really what a Swami was. So Prabhupada cannot demand respect. He can't, but he knows he just has to command respect by his personal example. So at least the people are calling him Swamiji, which is not so good, but it's something. At least he was, somebody knew him. And then what happened was, Prabhupada was doing everything. You know, he was chanting, he was cooking, he was cleaning. Little by little, the hippie Krishnas, who became his followers, initiated. They decided, oh yeah, the Swami's doing a lot. Maybe we should help him. You know, duh, right? Of course you got to help him. So gradually they became, there was some serious and sincere people. And Prabhupada was staying up, you know, all night practically writing books. He was translating the Gita. There was no books. He was Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and grandfather and everything all rolled into one. And then he did the unthinkable. In January 1967, after he'd established his first center and initiated a few batches of devotees, he took off to the West Coast from New York to San Francisco, because that's where the action was. Prabhupada always followed the action. He was always up to date. He wasn't stuck. Yeah. So, and then he opened up a second center with the help of some of his, well, Mukunda and Janaki, were this, they gathered all their friends and they opened up the second center. And then Prabhupada came back after launching that in the spring of 67, to New York, and then he was all set to give a big speech in Tompkins Square Park. But his health, all of a sudden, you know, he was having a little trouble with his heart. Irregular beats, and sometimes he'd get a little numb in his arm. And then one morning it was called Memorial Day. In America we have this holiday called Memorial Day where we honor the war veterans, just like you have Mr. Sugar Dave out on the street. So in America we have Memorial Day, and Prabhupada was going to give the peace formula, but he, all of a sudden, is he was in his room and there was a devotee with him, and his eyes started to roll and his hand was shaking, and then he fell back into the devotee's arms saying Hare Krishna, and he actually had a heart attack and a stroke, the third heart attack. He had two on the boat, and then Krishna saved the third one for this time. And then he was a little paralysis, or actually a lot of paralysis, heart attack. They took him to the hospital, and they didn't do any good there. And they were just, Prabhupada said, they're just poking me. They're just poking me with their needles. And then Prabhupada said, get me out of here. Right? So Garga Muni tells a story that he's wheeling Prabhupada around, you know, trying to get Prabhupada out of the hospital. He puts him on the gurney, you know, the wheeling bed. And then Prabhupada's supposed to get a test, you know, and Garga Muni doesn't know where he's going. He ends up going right in the room where they're going to give him a test anyway. And then they see what Garga Muni's trying to do, and they start screaming at him, don't, you're going to kill this old man. If you take him out of this hospital, he's in really bad shape, you know. So Prabhupada's sitting on the gurney, you know, chanting japa, Hare Krishna, Hare, get me out of here. You know, get me out of here. And the doctors are screaming, if you do this, blood will be on your hands. You're going to kill this old man, right? So they don't, this is heavy stuff. Who are they going to trust? So they trust Prabhupada. And the doctors insisted they sign release papers. We're not responsible for what happens. So what do the devotees do then? So they take him down to the Jersey Shore. There's a nice coast. I mean, it's early June now. It's usually nice in New York, New Jersey in June. They get him a little beach house, a little beach bungalow in a place called Long Branch, New Jersey, where my parents actually met and got married too many years ago. And then, but this weather is not good. It's blustery, it's chilly, it's too windy. Prabhupada's all bundled up there on Long Branch, and it's not working. It's not good for his health. He's trying to get his health back. And so before he had left San Francisco, he gave the devotees the idea that you can have Ratha Yatra here, because in San Francisco, that's where Lord Jagannath first appeared. If you know the history of ISKCON, we'll talk about that later, how he appeared. It's pretty funny. Only Lord Jagannath could appear in a special way. So the devotees heard that, oh, and by the way, you know, when Prabhupada had that heart attack stroke, he told the devotees to stay up all night and pray for him. And that's when Prabhupada gave the Nisringa prayer. So that's when the devotees learned Namaste Narasinghaya. So they sang that all night in New York and San Francisco. And so the devotees heard that Prabhupada wasn't getting any better on the East Coast, the West Coast devotees. So they said, well, Swamiji, come out to sunny California, and we're sure you'll get better here. So Prabhupada said, okay, because they said, we're going to have Ratha Yatra too. So they put him also up in a beach house on the West Coast, where the Pacific Ocean is. The East Coast is Atlantic. But it was like an hour away from the temple, and it was up mountain roads that wasn't good for Prabhupada to be on. And also, has anybody ever been to San Francisco? No? Okay. How long were you there? How long were you in San Francisco?
Just 2 days.
Okay. Well, you weren't there long enough. But the climate in San Francisco, it's kind of a perpetual autumn, fall. It's blustery, it's windy, it's very cloudy because of the fog coming in on San Francisco Bay, and big mountains block the sun. In fact, there's one American writer, have you heard of Mark Twain? Oh, okay. Yeah, he's famous. So Mark Twain, he was famous for his quips, so he quipped, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. Yeah, so, you know, the sun was rising above the mountains late in the morning, and then very early in the afternoon, the fog had rolled in off San Francisco Bay. It wasn't working. So Prabhupada, he's openly saying, I've got to go back to India. If I'm going to get my health back, I've got to go back to India, where there's heat, and there's Ayurvedic doctors, and Ayurvedic massage, and medicines, and diet that I can do better. But the devotees, they're thinking, whoa, if Swamiji goes to India, what's going to happen to us? You know, that's how we think. We think more of ourselves than the guru, right, in the neophyte stage. So this next selection on the screen, it appears both in the Lilamrita and in Mukunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on Second Avenue, what happened the day of Ratha Yatra when Prabhupada couldn't go. He was too weak. So Mukunda and Kirtanananda and Hayagriva stayed back. And Mukunda asked Swamiji a question he didn't want to ask, but the others kind of forced him to do it. So here's the question. So, you want to read?
When you die, what will happen to the movement, I asked. Will you have a successor who will continue your work and look after our spiritual education?
Okay. As I heard myself say the words, I realized it had been a mistake to ask this. The Swami sat silently, looking out the window at the sand dunes and the mountains. It was high tide, and I could hear the waves pounding the beach. Seagulls shrieked. The Swami muttered something quietly. I couldn't hear what you said, Swami, I said carefully. Can you repeat it?
Actually, it is an insult to the spiritual master, he said.
He turned away from the window and looked at me pensively. That means thoughtfully. As if he was hurt by my question. I'm sorry, Swami, I said. I felt like shrinking into the carpet. He closed his eyes. Outside, a dog barked. A shallow stream of tears appeared below each of his eyes and flowed over his cheeks. He slowly wiped them away. My spiritual master, he said. And his voice choked to gravel. I was stunned. What had I done?
My spiritual master, he said. He was no ordinary spiritual master. He paused again and then whispered falteringly. He saved me.
It was a very stunning, dramatic moment. What did Prabhupada mean? Ordinary spiritual master. Doesn't that sound a little strange? You remember in lesson one how we learned that there's different kinds of spiritual masters? Yeah. Guru is one, but guru is also different. Usually Prabhupada would say regular. But in this case, he even said ordinary. Wow. Now, a couple of days later, Prabhupada brought this incident up again. And he gave the purport to the incident. And here's the purport.
Later, Swamiji tells us what we should have always known. There is no one to replace him. The very idea is insulting. If someone comes and tells you something differently, he says, you will be confused.
So neglected by his godbrothers, Srila Prabhupada knows and is now revealing that he is being uniquely empowered to lead the new international Vaishnavas as the founder acharya of a dynamic branch of Lord Chaitanya's tree of love of God. In one CC purport, Prabhupada refers to ISKCON as a branch of Lord Chaitanya's Bhakti Kalpa Taru. He knows that his godbrothers can't really help us. So he doesn't want us to take intimate shiksha from them. At the same time, he wants us to respect them. So a couple of months later, he wrote this to Brahmananda, the president of New York Temple, the late Brahmananda Prabhu. Quote, even amongst our godbrothers, we have misunderstanding, but none of us is astray from the service of Krishna. My Guru Maharaj ordered us to execute his mission combinedly. Unfortunately, we are now separated, but none of us have stopped preaching Krishna consciousness. Even if there was misunderstanding amongst the godbrothers of my Guru Maharaj, none of them deviated from the transcendental loving service of Krishna. So that's one of those purports or letters, writings, where Prabhupada is embracing his godbrothers and warning us not to get an attitude about them just because he doesn't want us to go to them for shiksha. They're senior devotees. And don't fall into the trap of getting a negative attitude toward them. That's Vaishnava Parad, which is the worst thing for your spiritual life. Okay. So this incident, it's a very dramatic incident in ISKCON's history. Like it said in the Lilamrita, only he could lead them. Yes, by dint of Prabhupada's unprecedented surrender, Prabhupada was being unprecedentedly empowered to know how to turn people all over the world toward Krishna consciousness, not just Indians. Right? So, all right. So that's July 67. Fast forward 10 months. Now this is all in the service of how Lord Prabhupada is revealing himself to us. Remember, Lord Chaitanya revealed to Prabhupada what he had to do, what his position was. He had to start something new. Old wine in new bottles, Prabhupada called it. 65, obscurity. 66, Swamiji. 67, only he. And now, in 68, May, if you've read some of the memories, Swamiji becomes Prabhupada. It happened in Boston, Massachusetts. You see, Prabhupada is not demanding titles and respect. He's just letting Lord Chaitanya reveal the right time and place. So it was Boston, May 68, and Prabhupada said, so the time has come now for second initiation. He's already had several first initiations, so he wants to award brahminical initiation, and he does to several men, and there were a couple of ladies there, and they were not traditional Indian ladies. They were very, you know, bright, full of energy, American young ladies. And they wanted it too. They wanted second initiation too, and they were a little discouraged. One of them even boycotted the Brahmin initiation of some of the god brothers. And then at the last minute she ran over. What am I doing? I've got to be there. Anyway, they wanted it too. So Prabhupada made an adjustment. Okay, the ladies want Brahmin initiation. Okay. This is not the way it's done in India, but no big deal. Let's give. I see they're getting discouraged, so let's give them Brahmin initiation. So they got second initiation, and one of them was my god sister Govinda Dasi. Has Govinda ever been here? No? Okay. Well, she's on. You see her on the memories telling about how it happened. She actually was serving as Prabhupada's personal secretary, and her husband was this personal servant. So they were a husband and wife team serving Swamiji, right? And so Govinda says, let's see, there we go. Yeah. Yeah, Govinda said her husband, whose name was Gorsundar, he was dabbling in Sanskrit, so he wanted to call his wife. He found out that in Sanskrit, if you add G, you know, J-I, at the end, it's a term of endearment, like Vyasaji, Naradaji, Gandhiji, you know. So he wanted to call his wife Govinda Ji, right? So Govinda tells what happened. She says, so he asked Prabhupada, or Swamiji, and Swamiji said, no, actually, G is a third-class form of address. It's better not to call her Govinda G. Now, Govinda Dasi is sitting right there. And she is a very plain-spoken lady from Texas. She shoots straight. You know, she says what she means, and she means what she says. And Prabhupada allowed a very familiar relationship between himself and Govinda. It was kind of like grandfather and granddaughter. You know, so Govinda says, so I piped up, that means spoke up, pipes, you know, larynx. So I piped up. I was sitting right in front of him and I said, well, if it's a third class form of address, why are we calling you G? Why are we calling you Swami G? She's confronting Prabhupada. Right? And he said, it's not very important. I said, oh no, it's very important. If it's a third class form of address, then we don't want to call you that. And now we have to have a lady take over and pretend she's an American woman from Texas where they shoot straight and they mean what they say and they say what they mean. All right, so who's going to do that? You know how to talk in Texas accent? Well, you got to kind of talk like a cowboy. No, that's all right. You won't. All right. So now listen, when we put the words on the screen, you see what's happening here. Lord Chaitanya is doing something. And first of all, Prabhupada, he tries to change the subject, right? But here we go.
We want to call you the most first-class form of address. So tell us what would be a good name for us to call you by. And he was very humble, very reluctant.
But I pressed him, you see? She's not going to give up here.
But
she was very
reluctant, him.
Yeah. So first he's trying to get out of it, and then Govinda presses him. Go ahead.
We've got to change this. And he said, you can call me Gurudev or Guru Maharaj or Prabhupada.
Oh, so okay. So you see what's going on. Now Prabhupada sees, aha, this is a teachable moment here. Swamiji is not really befitting his position. But he allowed them to call him Swamiji because that's all they knew. But now Lord Chaitanya is creating a situation, we say a teachable moment, when they can learn. And it's coming from them. They want to know a better way. So Prabhupada, he gives them three choices. Then Govinda says, so I said...
Well, that's three. We need one.
Yeah, there's so. Govinda. That's three. We need one.
So which one is the best? And he answered, Srila Prabhupada is nice. That is the best. So I said, from today you will be called Srila Prabhupada.
Govinda Dasi Ki Jai. You see how Lord Chaitanya works? And then Govinda says, so I told all the devotees. Some of the devotees didn't like it because it's Prabhupada. It's kind of a tongue twister, Prabhupada. And Swamiji, it kind of flows more easily off the tongue. But gradually we started calling him Srila Prabhupada from that time. Now look, look what Prabhupada did here. You see? He gives him three choices. Now you can imagine if he said, well, call me Guru Maharaj. The change would not have been so momentous, so great. Because now in our multi-guru ISKCON, we have many Guru Maharajas, right? Many Gurudevs. But still there's only one Prabhupada. There's only one founder Acharya. So Prabhupada selected the one that would be unique, pivotal, main, primary, foundational. So Prabhupada's doing that. They don't know that. But they don't know Prabhupada from the man in the moon, right? But Prabhupada is not just a guru. He's a guru of gurus. He's a master at whose feet all the Prabhus sit. Okay. Now, so that's 68 May. Now you fast forward to July 70, the month I joined. And I didn't know it, but there was a big... ISKCON was really under threat when the month I joined. All I knew was that this is wonderful, and Bhagavad Gita and all the devotees are like angels, and you know how it is when you first come in, right? And then the incense and the deities. Right. So, but the ISKCON was under attack. And it was coming from envious people in India, and so Prabhupada's position was being minimized, compromised. And it was affecting some of the leaders. We'll see this later on in fictional Prabhupada's. But anyway, to protect ISKCON, I'll just tell you what Prabhupada did. To protect ISKCON, he approached some of the leaders he could still trust, and he said, would you please, we're going to have to strengthen ISKCON now. We have to form a GBC. He starts training people to take over the management when he no longer would be with us. And that was in July. Earlier, I think in March or April, he gave the devotees his pranam mantra, which was also unusual because usually the pranam mantra comes from the disciples, but we didn't know the pranam mantra. We didn't know what that was. So he gave us Namaste Saraswati Deve to highlight his mission and how what he's out to do. Actually, they all had the mission, but Prabhupada was the one that was doing it. So Prabhupada formed the GBC, and that, if you go in the Vedabase under Direction of Management, you'll see this legal document called Direction of Management, and you'll see where Prabhupada is legally establishing a committee to, at some point, you know, when he's no longer with us, to take over the management of ISKCON. Not to replace him, but to carry on to manage the preaching mission. So let's see how it reads. Prabhu, you want to read?
On July 82, 1917, when Srila Prabhupada legally established a government body commission to manage ISKCON, he formally identified his relationship to his mission.
Yeah, this is where you see now the full title. Okay, here's the title.
International Society for Krishna Consciousness Incorporated. I'm founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Yeah, there it is in writing. And then the next day, you know what Prabhupada did? He formed another legal entity called the BBT, separately. Because when the Gaudiya Mission broke up, in the course of fighting in the courts over who owned the assets of the Gaudiya Mission, one party sold the press for money to cover legal costs. No more press. So Prabhupada, you know, God forbid ISKCON go the way of the Gaudiya Mutt, but in case it did, Prabhupada separately incorporated a publishing house so that if the organization fell apart, at least there would be a publishing house to keep churning out the books. Okay, so it was strange. When I joined in Boston was where the press was. It was called ISKCON Press. Prabhupada formed the BBT there, but there was no BBT until a couple of years later. So it was ISKCON Press. So we were coming out with a second canto in paperback and softbound chapters. And then Brahmananda Swami, he had taken sannyas. So he would give the new chapters as they were coming out to Prabhupada. So as an example of how Prabhupada's position was being minimized, he handed a new chapter to Prabhupada, and on the cover, it might have been The Lord in the Heart, one of those second canto chapters. And it said, to identify the author, A.C. Bhaktivedanta. No Swami, no Prabhupada, no founder Acharya. It was practically stripped of any spiritual significance, that title. What else was going on? Well, temple presidents were writing Prabhupada letters on their own personal stationery. And Prabhupada said, by the way, when you write me a letter, you should get temple stationery and you should put International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And then finally the BBT did get up and running, and then they had a building, and then Prabhupada visited the building. There was nothing on the building identifying what the building was. No BBT, no ISKCON, no Founder Acharya, no nothing. One fine day, a temple president, unbeknownst to the devotees, sold the temple, took the money, and ran. The temple wasn't his name. It wasn't even ISKCON's name. My God. So after that happened, then Prabhupada knew that he had to amend those legal documents. He had to tell the GBC to pass a resolution. He dictated the resolution, and they passed it, and he signed off on it. Okay, so, want to read?
On July 22, 1974, Srila Prabhupada drafted an amendment. What that means, amendment?
Amendment, something in addition. You have a doc, and then you see there's a need for more clarification.
To his earlier management document, reasserting his supreme position in ISKCON.
Okay, so read this. To this day, I think this is the clearest statement of Prabhupada's position in ISKCON.
It is declared that His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is the founder Acharya of ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He is the supreme authority in all matters of the society. His position cannot be occupied by anyone else, and his name and title must appear on all documents, letterheads, publications, and buildings of the society.
And today, in our digital age, we could add websites. How are we presenting Prabhupada on our websites? Just for fun, I was presenting this seminar a few years ago in a very prominent temple of ours in Europe, and I went to their homepage to see how they were presenting Prabhupada. Couldn't find him. He wasn't even there. You know, finally I noticed a tab that said, History. Sure enough, I clicked on History, and there's a little picture of Prabhupada, a little blurb. I was shocked. I went to one of the managers. I said, Prabhuji, if we think Prabhupada's history, guess what we are? We're history. We're on the way out too, you know. So then, to the next year, to their credit, because they were getting the more in the founder acharya mood because of different resolutions and our committee's book on Prabhupada, and they were presenting him nicely on the homepage. Okay, so that was 74. You know what was going on? Well, Prabhupada is reasserting that same year, 1974, even as Srila Prabhupada was reasserting his position as ISKCON's founder acharya, while he was translating the Sri Chaitanya Chaitamrita, this is when Prabhupada translated CC, 74, 75, he also reasserted his and our disciplic obedience and service to his own spiritual master in the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So on the one hand, in this legal document, he's asserting his supremacy in ISKCON, right? So somebody might think, oh, why is he doing that? He's too proud or blah, 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 that's, which is nonsense, of course. He's just trying to protect ISKCON. But then he reveals his internal mood in a CC purport. So let's look. Ananta Prabhu, can you see?
As a members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we belong to the family or disciplic succession of Saraswati Goswami. And thus we are known as Sarasvatas. Obeisances are therefore offered to the spiritual master as Sarasvata Deva, or a member of the Sarasvata family.
Prabhupada's reminding us that even though he started a new branch of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, he didn't start a new Sampradaya. We're only coming down in the line through Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and we are Saraswats. It's like Kaunteya is the name of Arjuna derived from his mother Kunti. So Saraswat, this is a name derived from the father. In this case, the forefather is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And there's more too. Read that.
Namaste Saraswati Deve, whose mission is to broadcast the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauravani Pracharine, and to fight with impersonalists and voidists, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Dharine.
So, by founding ISKCON, Prabhupada had made a clean break from the non-cooperation that had fragmented Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's Gaudiya mission. At the same time, Prabhupada is now reasserting his and our absolute dependence on and fidelity to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as disciplic executors of Lord Chaitanya's mission. Now, that's 1974. Finally, there is one audio in this lesson, and it happens on Prabhupada's only visit to the continent of South America. Prabhupada went to Mexico a few times, that's Central America, but he went to South America once. Does anybody know where Prabhupada went? South America?
Caracas,
Venezuela. Which is really having a hard time now, that country. So Prabhupada, in February 75, he was lecturing on the first verse of the Bhagavatam. You want to read?
So here it is said that origin is life, because here it is said, Yaton vayat itira itaratash chartishu abhigyasvarat.
You know, the first verse, Janma yasya yaton vayat itaratash. Arteshva Bigyaksvara. And now that means
he is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent.
Independent. Now we're going to hear in the audio, I don't know if it's set right, we're going to find out, right? I'm not sure how my audio, I think my audio might be low on my, anyway. Okay. We're going to hear a very interesting analogy that Prabhupada's going to make. Just as Krishna is the origin and knower of his all creation, everything, so Prabhupada, as the founder acharya of ISKCON, he's the origin and knower of ISKCON. Listen to this. Let's see how it...
Just like if I am taking as the origin of this Krishna consciousness, Mumbai, that means I know everything directly and indirectly of all these movements. If I do not know directly and indirectly everything of this movement, then I cannot be called the founder acharya. And as soon as the origin becomes a knower, he is like.
As soon as the origin becomes a knower, he is life. In other words, just as Krishna is the origin and knower of the creation, Prabhupada, he's the origin and knower of ISKCON. He's the life and soul, actually, of all generations of devotees. But when we say that, we're not neglecting anybody else because, as the last slide will tell us, you want to read, Mataji?
As ISKCON's founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada is the life and soul of generations of his followers. Moreover, whoever enriches our foundational identities, Prabhupada Anugas, is also glorious. Deepening the cooperation will need to take Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya's mission of Krishna consciousness to every town and village on earth.
Yes. Whoever's doing that, enriching our relationship with Prabhupada. Those are the most important people in our lives. It's like, wow, 1970 July, I walked in the door at Boston Temple when I was a young man, 46 years ago? Wow. Okay. Now I'm old man. And I've had, you know, people who have really helped me a lot over the years. And they continue to help me. And those are the most important people in my very human life. Why? Because they're enriching, enhancing, and deepening my relationship with Srila Prabhupada. They're bringing me closer to him. So when we focus on Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya, we're not neglecting anybody else. That's a very important point. This is not a closet Ritvik presentation. This is a shastric balanced presentation. Okay, so Prabhupada is the... I thought that was a very interesting analogy. He's the knower, origin and knower of ISKCON, so he's the life and soul of all devotees in ISKCON for all generations. And now we're going to have Q&A. But first, lesson outcomes. By the end of the lesson, students will be able to identify Puranic and Gaudiya prophecies Srila Prabhupada fulfilled. Recount Lord Chaitanya's historical stage setting, east and west, for Prabhupada's coming. Recount how Prabhupada went from obscurity to Swamiji to only he to Prabhupada to founder Acharya between 1965 and 1970. Recount how Prabhupada formally identified his supreme position in ISKCON and how later he had to reassert that position because we didn't understand. Identify the position of Srila Prabhupada and ourselves in relation to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Lord Chaitanya's mission. And finally, we should be able to identify how Prabhupada is the life and soul of all generations of his followers. So that's the end of the Sambandha section. We have 7 more lessons left in the seminar. I don't know if we'll be able to do all the lessons, but I also noticed, again on the schedule, there is a gap tomorrow. I mean, is there any reason why we couldn't do 11:30 to 1 on Monday? We can do that? Okay. I love the next lesson. It's called His Mission's Roots. It's the moment he met his Guru Maharaj in 1922 to the moment he stepped on the Jaladuta in 1965. It's like a lifetime in preparation. Okay, so I'm going to sit down and please ask questions or make some comments. Anyone?
It's not so much about what you just said, but when you said that Prabhupada was always update, whatever happens. So did you ever thought or discuss with someone what would Prabhupada do in this time now, in internet time? It's so much. What would he do?
Yeah, well, we'll take, I think, more of a look at that in Lesson 8, to love us to cooperate when... Well, no, Lesson 10 is even more. how to represent Prabhupada. Yeah. I have a favorite purport in that regard. It's Bhagavatam 1.4.1. You can look at it if you want. How to be faithful but fresh. How to be parampara but creative. You know. And that's what Prabhupada, he would always say to us, if I have any credit, it's that I have not changed anything. He was always changing things. But he wasn't tampering with eternal principles. He was adjusting relative details. But that, my friends, is the source of most of our disagreements in ISKCON. What's changeable and what's unchangeable? That's what we go through all the time. And therefore, Prabhupada told us, especially the GBC, he said, you should meet in Mayapur every year and discuss how we can have unity in diversity. Yeah, and that's a real transcendental trick, how to do that. So we look at that in lesson 8. Yeah. So I think I'll save that. Yeah. Okay. Oh, Ananta has his hand up. No, you have your hand on his back. No, he doesn't. But somebody has their hand up. Oh, okay. I didn't see you.
Yeah, I heard that Prabhupada's godparents didn't agree with this title that was given to him.
Yeah, we look at that in lesson... Oh, when is that? That's lesson 8. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't like it that Prabhupada was letting us call him Prabhupada. But there was a bigger issue. You're going to see what happened. Yeah. It's unfortunate, actually, because, I mean, Prabhupada was the only one among them that was doing what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta asked them all to do. When we were helping Satsrup Maharaj, I was lucky enough to be part of the team that compiled the Leelamrita, the research team. So Satsrup Maharaj, he would assign us, give us assignments to do research and to do interview different people, for example. And so he gave himself the assignment of interviewing Prabhupada's godbrother, His Holiness Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj. So he went to the Devananda Saraswat Mutt on the Navadweep side of the Ganga, and one of the questions he asked Sridhar Maharaj was it only our Prabhupada that had the order to go to the West and preach in English? Because that's all we knew, that Prabhupada did it, but didn't you all? And so Sridhar Maharaj said, oh no, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was always saying that to all of us. But Swami Maharaj, he actually did it. Therefore, Shakti Avesh. Yeah, it was really a sweet interview. Yeah. And Prabhupada, he told Prabhupada that later in Mayapur too. You'll see that. I think that was their last meeting. 76, probably March. No, they all had the order. But Prabhupada did it. Yeah, he survived the Holocaust of the fragmentation of the Gaudiya mission. You'll see it next lesson. And Bhakti Siddhanta knew what was going to happen and who was going to revive it. He knew, because he could see the future. Okay, any points on this morning or now? Yeah.
Can I ask you, before you said you were born in New York, so you joined Srila Prabhupada in New York in this beginning? No.
No, it's funny. I was born in New York. I never liked the place. It always struck me as a dungeon of demons. My first memory in New York was looking down 13 stories down this apartment building to the street and being terrified. There were a lot of gangs, you know. Even in this nice kind of relatively nice place we were living, Stuyvesant Town, there were gangs roaming around, you know. It's actually a little safer in New York now. And that was 20 years before Prabhupada came. I was born in 46. Prabhupada came in 66. He started ISKCON. So it was Prabhupada that made it the holy place. When I was there, it was a dungeon of demons. But when I was 5 years old, my family moved a little 40 miles northeast of New York City. It's called, Connecticut is the state, and a little town called Stamford, where there's green, you know. I could actually see grass, and, you know, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. But I didn't join in 66. I didn't join until 70, because in 66, I mean, looking back on it, I was just a crazy, you know, college kid running around trying to enjoy, right? I wasn't ready then. So I lament now, yeah, that I wish I was there, you know, in the beginning, but I wasn't. Yeah. It's only when the desire is proper that, you know, that you get the Krishna sends you the guru. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Yeah. You have to have desire. My desire wasn't there. 66. I had to really get my nose rubbed in a lot of suffering before I came to Prabhupada. Do you have any more questions? But if you do go to New York, that's lesson 5. Okay, I'll save that. You must visit the tree. You did go. Okay. And you must visit the 26. Did you go there? Did you go to the donut factory?
Yes.
Ah. Wow. Did you stand in line?
Yes. Oh. Big line.
Okay, because if you went up to the front, you didn't know this, but the he's a devotee. If he knew known you were a devotee, he would have just let you go right up to the front. And whatever you want, it's on the house. You know, we say it's free. It's like they let me eat at the Govindas. So, same thing. Okay, so you've seen New York. Well, you can go to Brooklyn too and see Shishi Radha Govinda. Did you go there? Okay, you've been to the high spots. Right. Any other questions? So, can we make that official tomorrow at 11:30? Even though it's not on the schedule. Yeah. Okay. So, if you want to continue, it's the first lesson of. See how the color changed? It's now the Abhideya section. In the Sambandha section, we deepen our understanding of Prabhupada's position, our relationship with Prabhupada. And in Abhideya means we execute the relationship. We deepen our commitment to his mission. So there's a famous shot. It's the only one of its kind. And we'll talk about how that shot came to be, too. We're very lucky to have that. By the grace of the late, great Jamuna Devi and my god sister, Vishaka. Photographer, world-class photographer. Okay, so pretty soon the Mataji is going to come in and rehearse, right? The drama or something. We have a few more minutes. Do you have any more questions? Huh? Can't see. Oh, okay. We got Yure Prabhu.
So, what was the turning point in your life that actually made you?
How I came.
Yes. Just like this, when still you did not know devotees and Prabhupada, and what happened that you developed this desire.
And many things, actually. It wasn't as dramatic as Mukunda Maharaj reports in... Have you read Miracle on Second Avenue? It's a great book. Yeah. Where Mukunda Maharaj... You know, he got 26 Second Avenue for Swamiji. Can you imagine? What a great soul. I mean, he helped Prabhupada launch, you know, San Francisco. Then Berry Place in London. What do we say? What a resume. What a devotional resume. What a CV. But you know what convinced Mukunda Maharaj? Because my story isn't so dramatic or anything. When Mukunda Maharaj and Janaki, they were arrested. Did you know that? That summer. He got 26 Second Avenue for Prabhupada. And they would go to the storefront, but they were, you know, they were boyfriend, girlfriend, and Michael, he was up-and-coming professional musician. He was coming up in the music scene. He was playing with a lot of big names, actually. And he had a lot of friends in the music business. So one weekend, a friend of his invited him up to upstate New York and the friend rented cabins, and they were going to have a nice time over the weekend with their girlfriends, you know, in upstate New York, right? So, but unbeknownst to Michael, who became Mukunda, this guy who invited him, he was with an underage girl, with a minor. This is illegal. You can't, you know, mess around with underage girls. Does that make any sense in Slovenia? Okay. So, and also, he had some drugs on him. He had some marijuana, ganja, right? So they went up there on a Friday night, and the next morning, Michael wakes up, and there's squad cars outside of the cabins, and the police, they got a tip that some guy here is with some underage girl, you know, at these cabins in the Catskill Mountains, and the police come in, and they find the girl, you know, and they do a search, and they find the drugs, you know? So then they go in, the police arrest the guy and Michael, just because we say guilt by association, you know. And they take him down to the jail, and you know, Michael hadn't done anything. And then it's in the papers, it's in the New York Times, on the police blotter, you know, Michael Grant arrested for a case involving an underage girl and drugs, and you know. So all his friends, you know, he's in jail. He's trying to get out of jail, and nobody want anything to do with him because he's now, you know, a criminal. The only one who calls him is Prabhupada. That was very dramatic. Are you all right, Michael? Are you all right? You know, that was. Nobody would come to his aid. Only Swamiji. So that was a big thing, you know. Nobody's helping me, you know. Only Swamiji. So with Swamiji, Allen Ginsberg, the counterculture poet, had been visiting 26 Second Avenue. And he had some lawyer friends, and he got Michael out, who became Mukunda later. He was initiated. And so that was a big thing for Mukunda and Janaki, you know, Michael and Jan. That none of my, you know, hotshot music friends, you know, they're not helping me. And where's this going to go anyway? You know, Swamiji's preaching the truth. So let's help him. Let's throw our lot in with him. So they did. So that's a great example of how Prabhupada could touch people, because he cared. He cared enough to come. Sadhus don't come to the West to associate with people who were born and raised on sex, drugs, and rock and roll. No. They don't want to be contaminated, right? But Prabhupada had the compassion to go and live in the Bowery and associate with bums and, homeless people, you know. Yeah. So, anyway, my story, I was just a college dropout. Oh, good. So now we know Prabhu's here. Well, maybe I'll tell you a little more later. So, yeah, we gotta... Huh? You still have time. Do we have time? I don't know. Yeah? Well, the lady's not here with the kids yet. When the lady walks in with the kids, then it's all over, folks. I was dropping in and out of school, in the 1960s at a university, because every time you drop out of school, then you were no longer sheltered from the Vietnam War. You were eligible to be drafted into the U.S. And we didn't agree with this war. You know, it wasn't Dharma Yuddha, it wasn't Kurukshetra. It was a very cynical land grab by the Americans. So I hated school. I hated college because I wasn't learning anything. After I graduated high school, I thought, okay, I'm going to go to higher education. Now I'm going to learn the truth. Yeah, ha, ha, ha. The first day of my classes, my psychology text, it said, intelligence, that which intelligence tests measure. Oh, no. Here we go. This is high school all over again. They don't know anything. What are they? They're bluffing. You know? We were looking for the truth, our generation. That's what we were into. We were into the truth. So we weren't finding it in university. So finally I dropped out for the third time. And then anyway, it's a long story. And then they wanted to draft me, and then I just left America. I just went to Canada. Canada was very sympathetic to people who didn't want to fight in the Vietnam War. They were neutral. And so I went to Toronto, Canada, and that's where I found 10,000 people like me. Americans who were protesting the war. And we would riot on the weekends. Just like I told you about the brick, you know, we were doing the same thing, you know, rioting and, you know. And then we were hungry. We couldn't get work because even the Canadians couldn't get work. It was a recession, an economic recession was on. So my roommate from Minnesota one day, he said, oh, I know what we can eat today. We can go to the Krishna temple. It's Sunday. They have a Sunday feast. There it is. It's prasadam. So we went. And as soon as I went to the temple, wow. It was one of those typical early ISKCON temples. You know, it was kind of a funky place. And it was painted all these psychedelic colors, yellow and purple and, you know, catering to the hippies. And then, seeing Prabhupada's picture, seeing Lord Chaitanya's picture on the road, dancing, you know, with the long hair. And in some respects, Lord Chaitanya looked to us like the ultimate hippie. Because he had long hair, and Prabhupada said he's the originator of civil disobedience. We were already rioting, we were already dancing in the streets. So it didn't seem like such a far thing to go from rioting and dancing in the streets to joining the Harinam party. You know, we were already kind of doing that stuff. So I was very impressed. Everything was familiar, too. Everything seemed like déjà vu. You know, the French have that phrase. Everything was, wow, I know this. Especially the mantra, wow. That really struck a primeval chord. Wow, I know this. You know, and Prabhupada's picture, Lord Chaitanya's picture, everything seemed. Yeah. And then the feast, of course. And then reading, my first book was Easy Journey to Other Planets. Wow. And I was drinking. I kept drinking sweet rice, you know, and reading the book. I was getting intoxicated. You know. Wow, I got to find out about this. If this is true, I want to know about it, you know. So then I bought the Gita, and it was that butchered Macmillan Gita, that first paperback copy where two-thirds of the purports were missing and purports to wrong verses. But still, enough of the potency shone through that I was convinced, wow, this is the truth, yeah. Chinchin Beta Beta Tava, this makes sense. And then I went to the temple and I said, he got any beads? Yeah, we have some beads, but we don't have any string. So, well, that's okay, just sell me 108 beads. So they sold me 108 beads in a paper bag. And I was a runner in those days, so I just took the beads in the paper bag and I tucked it under my arm and I ran. I was running all over Toronto, and then I'd sit down in the park when I got tired and I put my hand in the bag. I just finger the beads and chant the mantra. And then I'd get up and then I'd run again. And I'd run around the next park, I'd sit down. And pretty soon the chanting overtook the running. And I knew that if I were honest, I had to join. I had to be part of this. But I was in Canada, so I didn't want to join there. So I wanted to go back to America where I knew America better than Canada. So I wrote the army. I said, I've seen the error of my ways. I want to fight for my country. I just need fresh papers to come across Niagara Falls, the border. So it was just a trick to get back into America with legal papers. So they, oh, this is great. Come on home. Yeah, fight for your country. Here's your papers. So I just got back across the falls and I hitchhiked to Boston. And that's where I joined, Boston, Massachusetts. Yeah. But after 2 weeks, I tried to leave the temple because I couldn't. It was too fast for me. It was very high-powered. All the artists were there, all the press, ISKCON press, and there was no bhakta program or devotee care or any of this stuff. You know, it was sink or swim, right? Yeah? Sink or swim. So after 2 weeks, one night, it was warm. It was July. I put my bedroll outside the prasada room where the new people slept. And then I crept out, you know, and then I went down the street and I slept in a park where there was a nunnery. It was the nuns had a place. And so I put in my bedroll. And then I was woken up in the morning by Hridayananda Brahmachari. He was the temple commander. And he looked down and he said, Dick Prabhu, are you coming to Mangal Arati? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Are you coming to Mangal Arati, Prabhu? No, it's too much for me. No, it's too fast. And this, I got my beads, I got my Gita. I'm just going to chant Hare Krishna and be a hippie Krishna, you know, hippie Krishna. Anyway, he just convinced me to come back to the temple. And he sat me down on the porch with the president, who was Satsarup Das Adhikari, who was married at the time. And I asked him, did you ever have any doubts? And he said, doubts? Oh yes, I had many doubts. Many bitter doubts. I didn't know his history, that as soon as he joined, his parents disowned him. Never saw them again. And they were a very close Catholic family. And it really hurt him. But he just said, I had many bitter doubts. But Prabhupada, with one swing of his cane, he kicked out all those doubts. Now, he was the president. I just needed a friend, that's all. Just a big brother. So he gave me over to another devotee named Bharadraj, who was an artist, whose paintings you've seen in the books. In fact, it was on the dashboard of Radhe Govinda's car yesterday, a little picture of Krishna. That was a Bharadraj painting. Anyway, I know you've seen a lot of his paintings. So, and he's a short guy, and he's he kind of talks like this. Bharadraj Prabhu, what about your parents? What do you say to your parents? Oh yes, the parents. Well, they're like children. You just have to be kind to your parents. He would just japa walk me around the block, you know. And he'd give me advice. And so that's how I stayed. I got a friend. We all need friends. So, and here I am, 46 years later. Still trying. Just like Dina Bandaprabhu said, just, it might seem impossible, it might seem hopeless, but just chant Hare Krishna. Just one more mantra. Remember when he said that? Just chant Hare Krishna. We're all just mercy cases here. Kali Yuga means super mercy for the super fallen. Okay, we better end. But so please come tomorrow at 11:30 when we'll do the first lesson of Abhideya. His mission's roots. It ends in my favorite ending. It ends with a song. My god sister. You'll see a beautiful song. She's singing to the Atlantic Ocean, begging the Atlantic to let Prabhupada come. Oh, Atlantic. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.